football on off the ball.
I know we questioned the decision to give him a new contract pre-game, which still feels a little bit odd, but ultimately I think he deserves it.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
The news round on Off the Ball. This is News Talk.
Good evening, you're welcome along to Thursday night's Off the Ball. It's Owen here with you till 10 o'clock this evening. Coming up, we're going to be speaking to Brian O'Driscoll from around 7:30. He's going to be in studio here to look ahead to Leinster versus Edinburgh in the Champions Cup. We'll be talking about the Challenge Cup picture where the rest of the Irish provinces are competing, of course, between now and the end of the season. And of course, we will be discussing the Jeff Parling-Craig Doyle incident, which seems to be the most viral rugby moment from the past week. Brian O'Driscoll was one of the closest humans to the incident as it all unfolded. So we'll be finding out if he too was terrified by Jeff Parling's presence on the pitch last Saturday. Willie Maher then is going to join us from 8:20 this evening. He is the head of National Hurling for the GEA. He's been in this gig for about a year at this point. So we'll be catching up on what he's done so far in his role. And also we'll be discussing some of the new rules with regards to dissent that are going to be coming into the game, that have come into the game, and we're going to see in full flow for the league finals this weekend. After 9 o'clock, as always, the football show is coming your way. And tonight we've got a feature interview with Terry Phelan. So this is sort of an interregnum between the international break and the return of the FA Cup. And we thought it'd be a great time to speak to Terry Phelan because he is, of course, a man who has played at a World Cup and he's also won the FA Cup at Wimbledon back in 1988 when they beat Liverpool. So he's currently working in India. So really, really interesting stuff going on in his life at the moment. And we'll be going down memory lane with Terry Phelan between 9 and 10 this evening. Our number is 087-9180-180 if you want to send us a WhatsApp message. Daniel Pitcher will be delivering the news round momentarily. Daniel, how are you doing?
Good evening. How are you?
Very well. And John Duggan is here in studio on Thursday's news round. John, how are you?
Owen and Daniel, good evening.
How are you adjusting to these later evenings? You're in the office milling about on a Thursday evening compared to...
It's strange after 7 years of doing News Talk Breakfast that now it's late night movies and 2 a.m. you know, scotch bottles. And money joking. But there's a lot of late night activities just kind of... And then kind of wake up whenever you feel like it and... Can slowly ease your way into the day.
Sounds equally shady and wholesome, I must say. This is surely your time to get into American sports, John.
Yeah, I've been to American sports. I've been to all three, baseball, American football and basketball in the United States, and the great spectacles and occasions. But the NFL, I'm actually watching the Dallas Cowboys documentary at the moment.
Yeah, what do you think?
Fantastic. I've read the book, Boys Will Be Boys, and the documentary's living up to it because Troy Aikman is a big part of it. Part of the documentary wasn't really part of the book. Obviously golf next week now will be something else to not have to get up at 4 a.m. in the morning and talk about it.
We are a week away from the Masters. I know you've also been watching the Rory doc.
Yes, I watched it last night. The Masters Wait is called at Amazon Prime. Obviously doing great advert for them and myself here now. But it's worth a watch, folks. There's a picture put on Rory's social media in the last couple of hours of him in the green jacket up at the Giants Causeway. Obviously not taken today, but with all the four trophies beside him, the Open Championship Claret Jug, the PGA Wanamaker Trophy, the US Open Trophy, and the Masters Clubhouse Trophy, which you do get as well when you do win the Masters, as well as the jacket. So... are we going to see anything like that from our country again? Generational talent like Rory McIlroy. I don't know if you want to talk about it now, but there's fascinating things in the documentary. I don't want to give too much of it away, but Jerry McIlroy, he's the only son, Rory, of Jerry and Rosie. And when he was at Hollywood Golf Club where his dad worked, Jerry, say if it was a par four he'd be playing, Jerry'd make it a par five. So if he got a four, he'd make a birdie. So psychologically, he would always be positive about getting these birdies. And a big part of the Rory, and he's extensively interviewed in the documentary, as are Bob Rotella, Brad Faxon, his coaches, Jerry, Rosie, his manager, Sean O'Flaherty. And Rory's big part of it, talking about they're going through the whole of the Masters final round last year, all 18 holes, but then there's an intersperses back to his childhood or back to early parts of his career. It's very well produced. It's an excellent, it does it justice because... It could easily have been Justin Rose who won the Masters, but obviously we had the generational career Grand Slam story. You'd hope that the documentary does it justice, and it does.
Okay.
So it's very well produced. It's excellent.
Do we learn anything new?
There's definitely things I would have learned. That thing about the birdies, the positivity was when he was a young lad, his obsession with the game, the fact that he enjoys his own company as an only child, and therefore he was quite resistant to suggestions about how to do things maybe a bit differently. But then again, you see the two experts that have really, I think, brought him to that new level. Faxon, the putting coach. McIlroy says the putting is the part of the game he's enjoyed the least. And then Rotella, about all this commentary Rotella talking about, oh, well, he's never going to get over that missed shot, that golf is a game of mistakes. Golf's not a game of perfect. So if you think about it, that if you can be able to reset after a mistake better than you would have had in previous years, Jerry would have felt that Rory was trying too hard every time he come up there in the 10, 11 years. So it's very much an admission. It's an open book. You don't need to really need to read an interview with Rory McIlroy that somebody's got a world exclusive, because every time he opens his mouth, it is a world exclusive.
That's the thing. That's why you're interested in what a documentary about Rory McIlroy will actually unveil. But then it's not just Rory. The parents, by the sounds of things, are the stars of the show.
Yes. And that they've been so invested in. There's an earthiness, there's a grounded nature, even to someone who's a global superstar.
And just because I'm curious, John, obviously because you've seen it, and there's a family link here, does it go into anything to do with the, you know, his upbringing, like through the Ulster Boys and the Irish Boys team when he was...
Not really, no.
As a younger kid.
It's more about the Jerry Kelly show and the washing machine.
Sure.
And living effectively in Hollywood Golf Club and practicing from dawn to dusk. It's more about that. It doesn't really go through his amateur days.
Sure.
If it's going to go back to anything, it goes back to 2011 when he blew that Masters tournament as a 21-year-old and there was no hiding place, and they came out and won the next major. I think one of the greatest achievements Rory McIlroy can have on a CV is that he bounced back from the 2011 Masters defeat and won the next major at Congressional. I thought that was an amazing part of his career. But the beef with Bryson is also interesting, that Rory, I mean, it is out there, the story that the Pinehurst US Open, when Bryson came out on top and Rory missed those couple of short putts, that was lingering the final round. It was very much a match play situation. And then at the ninth hole, the lead had kind of exchanged, it had fluctuated, but Rory got back on top by the ninth, and Rory's putt was further out than Bryson's, and Bryson was going to go, should we kind of toss a tee for it? And Rory's going, no, this is the Masters, this is the final round of the Masters, let's call a rules official. And Bryson then went, just whatever, just go ahead. And then Rory puts first, sinks the putt, Bryson misses. So even the psychology, in the gentlemanly game, the little bit of an edge and the bit of psychology in a final round of a major that you might not expect to happen.
Does he have a chance next week?
Always got a chance. One of the things he said in the documentary as well, I should be on commission or something, that's it, it's done. And the relief he felt after that putt in the playoff against Justin Rose last year. So I think he'll never, I mean, think about it. Every single, since 2015, when he had three of the majors, he's been asked the question of the career Grand Slam. He's going to really enjoy that press conference this week. So with the talent he has, he's always got a chance.
And have you started formulating?
No, the bird is in the birdcage and there's a cloak on it, and I haven't gone there yet.
Bam, Scotty Scheffler. Surprise.
I think Ludvig Åberg is a very good player, and he's a guy that strikes me. He has got in the disposition to win majors. But I do think we're almost heading towards a post Rory era in a way. And like Shane and Rory, they're now on the wrong side of 35. And look, I hope he's another 10 years with them. But who are going to be the next stars? Obviously Tiger Woods' sad demise from a golfing perspective, and obviously he's got his own other issues. Who's going to be the next person to come out? It doesn't really feel that there's a generational player, because with Rory, you know, you have this thing about the Jerry Kelly show and the washing machine. I want to be Tiger Woods. I'm going to win all the four majors. It actually happened. That actually happened is so rare that it actually could happen.
Yeah.
And who's going to be the next? It just seems to me that we're in one of these maybe phases now where it's just the pack. And obviously Scotty has been. And I think Scotty Scheffler's achievements have been so off the scale and bigger than Rory's. But because Rory is such a strong character and has done the career Grand Slam, that he still, to me, is the face of the sport.
Yeah, no question about that. So less than a week to wait until the best time of the year, the Masters, starts next Thursday. We shall get to tonight's news round. As I say, Dan Pitcher here in studio bringing us through the day's stories. We're starting at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium.
Yes, indeed. And the new Tottenham boss, Roberto De Zerbi, has apologised for his past comments about Mason Greenwood, saying that he never wanted to downplay violence against women. The Spurs Supporters Trust criticised his appointment after he spoke in defence of the striker during his time in charge of Marseille. De Zerbi said that Greenwood paid in a strong way after charges against him, including of attempted rape, were dropped. Now, he made an apology all in Italian, so we don't have that audio to bring you from that in English. But he was also asked to, looking ahead, about what he's going to bring to the hot seat at Tottenham, with the club in danger, obviously, of being relegated this season to the Championship. Regardless of that, he says that he will still be manager next season.
Football, the style of play, the tactical disposition are important. There is a mentality, and I would like to help the player to reach the best mentality we can show. I signed 5 years of contract because I for me is a big challenge, and I will be the coach of Tottenham next season, no matter what. I love keeping the ball, I love the ball possession, I love create chance to score. But in the same time, I love 11 defenders when we have not the ball, because in this time of football, we have to attack in 11 players with the goalkeeper as well. And we have to defend in 11 players when the ball is not for us.
I think anybody, John, who can tell you that they're fully confident in Roberto De Zerbi being the guy to save Tottenham Hotspur, I think they're lying, or they've got some misplaced information.
Is that because of the... It sounds like the late night music to what I was speaking about earlier on.
Yeah, that's the soundtrack to John Duggan's living room after 1 a.m. Except Roberto De Zerbi, for some reason, is in the room.
Is that him admitting that basically he's just going to attempt to park the bus in every game, 11 defenders?
Wherever required, it seems. Like, I don't think this is necessarily a bad appointment, but that's as strong as I'm willing to be on this. And I think anybody who's negative about it probably can only go the same way as well, by saying, like, I don't think this is going to work out. Like, this could work out, John, but there is nothing that resembles a sort of a sure thing about this whatsoever.
No, I don't think would that be the case of if Pep Guardiola went in, to be honest, the way that squad is, and 7 games to finish it. It's amazing in a way, the way we're speaking about Spurs, Daniel, and Owen, that they're not actually in the relegation zone, that West Ham are in it. Look, he's a very good manager. There's a degree of short-termism with him, but he's like Sassuolo. What he did there was very good. 2 8-place finishes in Serie A, then went to Brighton, of course, took over from Potter, who was doing well, and brought them to 6th after nearly a full season, which was very impressive. And Marseille 2nd in the first season then. And then with all these clubs, it seems to go in a certain direction. But for his own reputation, he probably needs to have a bit of stability for his own reputation. So maybe he could see him in the Championship next year with Spurs. But I don't know if some of the players are fit to wear the shirt. And I don't know if De Zerbi, whatever he does, can get the best out of them.
That's the real danger, John. And I've made this point earlier this week. It's why I think that going for a Deitch or a Big Sam would have been the wrong move for this group of players, because there is an ego question here, and maybe De Zerbi comes with these lofty sort of reputation pieces about him. I'm not sure he deserves a high reputation, but certainly he has at one point in the not too distant past been referred to as like one of the brightest young coaches Europe.
He's got,
and that'll count for something with the personalities in
the
dressing room.
Yeah, and they did respond to Ange initially when he had this incredible football, with the attacking football, that it was almost kamikaze football at times. But when it worked at Manchester City away, or the fans are really on side with it. So, like, he's a manager who likes to beat the press. He likes to attack. It can be very exciting. He was an attacking midfielder as a player himself. And you know, there are players in there like Richarlison, who's got a bit of fight about him. Archie Gray has been good. But can you keep Christian Romero on the pitch? Can you keep Mickey van de Ven's head in the game? I'm not so sure. Like, the club at board level have, for all intents and purposes, run a glorified, glitzy leisure centre for 25 years. A fantastic business, an entertainment hub with NFL games, with Beyonce concerts, and with go-karting and all this kind of thing. They'll have European Championship matches. It is a fabulous, one of the best stadiums you'll ever go to.
Where can you go-kart?
Underneath us, apparently.
Right.
Like they can they change the pitches for the NFL. Like, it is a fantastic stadium, but the product, the football product, is a byproduct of this leisure centre, this entertainment hub. And that's not what... So the apathy for as 40 years as a fan is seeping through my veins as a Tottenham Hotspur fan. They won 4 trophies in 40 years, and none of them big ones.
What about the show of support from the fans before the Nottingham Forest game?
Well, the team are so brittle that I said to myself, they can't concede first. Once they conceded first,
that was game over.
It was game over.
And do you know what? It probably just stands to them as well that they've, like, you know, obviously the FA Cup is back this weekend, but they've got that extra week, and especially with internationals coming back. And, you know, that he's not having to hit the ground running straight away, that he has that extra couple of days to prepare and, you know, sort of hammer things home with the players.
One game I was impressed with, Atletico Madrid at home, clearly the better team. Now, Madrid are through, but how many scouts, how many European football people are watching the players unrecognisable from than the Forest game? Mm-hmm. So the players are there. You can't tell me the players haven't got the talent to stay up. They do, but there are no leaders in that dressing room for what I can see. This was a team that had Alderweireld, Vertonghen, Kane, Son, and none of these people are around anymore.
Now, from a crisis club to a crisis nation in footballing terms, what's going on with Italy?
Yeah, Luigi Buffon has resigned as Italy's delegation chief after Federation President Gabriele Gravina stepped down following another World Cup qualifying failure. Italy's playoff defeat to Bosnia and Herzegovina means the Azzurri will miss a third consecutive World Cup. I still have to remind myself that it is a third, but it also increases pressure as well for sweeping reforms. The sports minister Andrea Abodi says Italian football needs leadership straight away. Meanwhile, Roberto Mancini and Antonio Conte are the names being linked to replace their head coach.
Now then, we have Steven Gerrard talking about Mo Salah.
Yeah, he says that he warned Mo Salah not to leave the club under a cloud after the forward's public frustration earlier this season. Salah is set to depart Anfield at the end of this campaign, just a year into a 2-year contract signed only last summer. The Egypt international had criticised the club back in December after being left on the bench, fueling speculation that he could leave as early as January. Gerrard believes that both sides now have a chance to end on good terms, with a proper farewell expected in the coming months. Bayern Munich have played down links with Salah, meanwhile, while moves to Barcelona or PSG could be considered. Now, Gerrard was speaking to the Stick to Football podcast.
It's in everyone's interests for it to end, but also end on Mo Salah's terms. So I spoke to him around that interview at the time and sort of said to him, look, don't do what you've done. And
spoke to Mo Salah direct?
Go under a cloud. Yeah, I spoke to him direct, yeah.
But you rang him, or?
Well, he texts me now and again, or I text him now and again. More to do with if I'm going somewhere with Leo, just so Leo can see him, really. But I'm not, like, close to him. But it gave me the opportunity to say to him, look, you've been here for 8-9 years. You've been a king here. You've got this legacy and stuff. Just go on your terms the right way.
Yeah.
How was he when you say that?
Still a little bit emotional from the incident. And he was subbing. He was in and out of the team at the time. He was upset. But I just thought it would have been a shame if he left in January and he just left.
Was that a consideration at the time, do you think?
Not sure, don't know.
Okay, Steven Gerrard there speaking about the Mo Salah situation. Loads more to come tonight on the News Round. The News Round is brought to you by Viagra Connect. 50 milligram film-coated tablets contain sildenafil for adult men with erectile dysfunction. Maximum dosage, 150 mL tablet per day. Always read the label. Buy online at viagraconnect.ie. Subject to suitability following pharmacist consultation. So as I say, Dan Pitcher, John Duggan staying with us for the next 10, 15 minutes or so. And before all that, it's time for the Cash Machine. Welcome back. Dan Pitcher is here with tonight's News Round. John Duggan also in studio with us as well, who's telling us now about a big outsider at Kelso that came home for a big money return for anybody who got on him.
The trainer didn't get on him anyway.
Okay.
Croke's Cross, Stuart Coulthard, 300-1 winner at Kelso today in the novice hurdle. The joint biggest prize winner in racing history. Blowers was the other one in the UK in December of last year. And then we've had a couple in recent years in Ireland. We had Sawbuck at Punchestown in 2022. And in 2020, He Knows No Fear at Leopardstown. It feels like in the old days, the money would go on in the ring. So there'd be a limit to the prizes in the ring. But now it's all done offline. And I think this is creating a situation where you do have bigger priced horses. There was 97 quid matched in this horse today at 1,000 to 1 on the betting exchanges. So not all from the same person, I would expect.
Yeah. But 1,000 to 1?
In running, yeah. Well, 999
in
to
running.
1.
That's insane.
Like that's like Leicester winning the Premier League odds for a horse
yeah,
race.
Yeah. The Leicester was 5,000 to 1.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. Quite a bit off, so yeah. I had 500 in my head.
Yeah, you do have golfers, I mean, because there's 150 players in the golf tournament. There's only 10 horses in this race at Kelso today. So a horse that came from Ireland, Croke's Cross, had shown no form really in Ireland, but with a bit of change of weather, she delivered today at Kelso, and there's no fluke about it. She won well.
What have you got for us FA Cup-wise?
Yeah, Leeds boss Daniel Farke admits that he's got a difficult balancing act between keeping the club in the Premier League and also progressing in the FA Cup. They'll face West Ham this weekend and are just 4 points off their opposition at the bottom end of the Premier League table. The sides will also play each other at the London Stadium on the final game of this season. Today, Farke was asked if he was prioritising staying in the top flight when it comes to the team that he'll send out this weekend. But he insists that he is up for the fight in London.
Yes, of course, the Premier League is our bread and butter business and it has, of course, highest priority, but I'm a big believer in the cup competition and it's the first time since, I think, over two decades that we're in the quarterfinal of the FA Cup and we know that we all have the chance to write a bit more history for this club. And on the other hand, it's also like it makes no sense just to put the players for 3 weeks into cut and roll, just to have them available or not injured then for the next game on a Monday night away at Man U. It doesn't work in this way. So they need to stay in the rhythm. They need to stay sharp. And for that, we just have the next league game then just 8 days later. So for that, it makes no sense to rest too many players. We want to go with a strong starting lineup without doing anything stupid. If you got the feeling someone is a risk due to some physical problems or whatever, we won't risk it. But apart from this, we want to go with a strong starting lineup.
Yeah, Daniel Farke will be in Croke Park this summer, John. Mm. Leeds United versus Manchester United.
Yeah, August the 12th, a Wednesday evening, subject to two caveats, I suppose. If Leeds are relegated, it won't happen because the Championship will be at the same time. And if Leeds win the FA Cup, it won't happen because of the Community Shield. But if those things don't happen, we'll have that friendly against Manchester United.
There is the potential for a clash should an Irish club progress in one of the European competitions. Okay. I think that's around the same sort of time frame, so it'll be interesting.
Well, as in, but it'll just be like two different football fixtures happening on the same day.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, if you're a Leeds or Manchester United fan, or a fan of either Shamrock Rovers, Shelburne, Bohemians, and it potentially, I'm not saying, look, hopefully Irish clubs do progress as far as the third round and beyond, but it's kind of like a big balancing, where do we go?
Yeah, I mean, you go to whatever club you feel closest to, I guess. I don't know, I haven't really seen any online discourse about this. Has this been met with outrage?
I think it's just because it's potential and the fact that are an Irish club really, like, I mean, obviously Shelburne and Shamrock Rovers got to the group stages last year, but it's just if.
Yeah, I don't know, it's Croke Park. Kind of sweating its asset in the best way possible.
Once in a lifetime kind of thing as well.
Yeah, I don't really...
It'll be
or
full.
Once in a generation, well, not once in a lifetime, one in maybe a generation.
It'll be full, no question always about will, it. Yeah. I was at the last game there, last soccer game, which was the game before the Hand of Henri, 1-0 defeat to France at Croke Park. It actually suits soccer. It's fine.
Yeah, it's good, yeah.
You read about the London Stadium. I've never been to the London Stadium, West Ham, and
I remember Sean St. Ledger scoring against Italy there, and I was there. It was actually probably one of my first games as a young reporter, and feeling the ground actually shaking as he scored in the 87th minute was just an incredible feeling.
Yeah, and then we conceded.
Straight away.
There is the fact here that last time... Well, it wasn't the last... it was last time Manchester United had a friendly in Dublin. That was...
Sampdoria, was it?
Bilbao.
Was it Bilbao?
2023, and then it ended up being a second-string Manchester United team that ended up coming to Dublin because there was another friendly that was fixed after the fixture against Bilbao in Dublin was fixed. So that could also come into proceedings. Anyway, let's move on to the League of Ireland. What have you got for us?
Bowes hope to get back to winning ways this week after what has seemed like the longest 2 weeks ever internationally. League of Ireland returning tonight with a tough run of games up for the leaders. Bowes They've dropped points recently against Dundalk and Shelburne. Their lead is just a single point as they hit the road up to Drogheda. That'll be followed by home games against Waterford and Sligo and two away games versus Shamrock Rovers and St. Patrick's Athletic. Alan Reynolds serves the first of a three-game suspension, while Douglas James Taylor is rated as 50-50 to make his return from a knee injury, and God, they badly need him. Speaking to Bowl's social media today, Sam Todd knows that they will be under pressure.
We're disappointed with our performance against Dundalk and the result, obviously, but listen, everyone's ready to go again, and it's important to get 3 points tonight, tomorrow. Yeah, listen, we have a really strong squad. I think it's been said many times this year. Everyone's competing for places, and the competition's really strong all over the squad. But yeah, listen, we're going to have to use our squad in the next 3 games because obviously tired legs again. So now listen, we're just focused on tomorrow and make sure we get 3 points.
Well, that will be our live game on Off the Ball tomorrow night. Elsewhere, Shelburne play host to Dundalk with just 2 points separating them in the table. Second place, St. Pat's take on Sligo Rovers. Bottom of the table, Waterford bring Shamrock Rovers to the URC and Derry City head to Galway.
We have some Challenge Cup team news.
Yes, indeed. Connacht and Munster both in Challenge Cup last 16 action this weekend, with the provinces naming strong sides. Keane Prendergast returning to captain Connacht against the Sharks at Dexcom Stadium, with Bundy Aki and Sam Gilbert also included in among seven changes. A sixth successive victory would see Connacht equal their best winning run in a decade. Meanwhile, the Munster captain Tadhg Byrne will make his first provincial appearance since January for the clash with Exeter Chiefs out at Sandy Park. Head coach Clayton McMillan making 10 changes, with Gavin Coombs returning to the back row alongside Jack O'Donoghue and Alex Kendellan. Ben O'Donovan could make his debut from the bench as Munster target a place there in the quarterfinals. A massive as well that they do, given the well-publicised financial troubles that they're also going through.
Yeah, just a brief mention as well that there was talk today from John Prenti that they're hoping to reopen the Connacht GAA Dome at the beginning of next month, and also in golf, Luke Donald confirming that Eduardo Molinari is going to return as a vice-captain for the Ryder Cup in Adair Manor. Dan Pitcher, thank you very much for tonight's news round. John Duggan,
thank you.
Good to have you in. So Saturday afternoon, 1 o'clock, Off the Ball Saturday.
Off the Ball Saturday, a Masters preview panel. We'll have Gary Murphy in studio with Gavin Cooney. We've got Football Saturday as always, and James O'Connor looking ahead to the hurling. And then Sunday, 1 to 8, including commentary live and exclusive of Leinster Edinburgh.
Very good. Well, that game.
Easter.
That game is what we're going to be previewing after the break with Brian O'Driscoll, who's going to be here in studio.
Off the Ball on News Talk.